Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.
Welcome to the MIP.
Yeah!
The Michael Irvin Podcast.
You knew this was coming.
Guess who? Let me start this thing off.
Join me every week for the Michael Irvin Podcast. We'll give you the full MIP experience. I'm talking everything from football to fashion. I will be chopping it up with playmakers, headline makers, and I am throwing haymakers. I'm the MVP of the MIP. Don't miss it.
Download new episodes of the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast, every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.
Hey, it is Ross Tucker from the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, among other NFL-related podcasts, the former NFL offensive lineman, and yes, we are going to have an NFL season. It is here, thankfully. So, if you want to bet on the games, it is the Even Money Podcast. If you just want to play fantasy football, Fantasy Feast Podcast, or every day your NFL fix, the aforementioned Ross Tucker Football Podcast.
Hey guys, have a great deal for you at Monkey Knife Fight, as all first-time depositors that put at least $20 into their account while using the promo code PFF will receive a free PFF Edge annual subscription. That's a $40 value for just $20. That's right, it's a no-brainer, and you get the opportunity to turn that $20 into even more money playing daily fantasy and prop games at one of the fastest-growing fantasy sports sites in the USA in Monkey Knife Fight. Go to Monkey Knife Fight and deposit your $20 with the promo code PFF today to receive your PFF Edge annual subscription, a $40 value.
I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFF.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam. So, who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
PFF NFL Podcast Week 3 NFL Preview. Sam, let's get right into it. I don't care how you are.
You're so loud.
What do you mean?
I'm just, you know, we're working on getting the mic position next to your face, and then you just, like, let rip with a megaphone. Right?
Energy time. It's energy time. I had weeks of pent-up energy and takes. Like, let's get into it. Week 3, starting with, right now, we're recording on Thursday morning. Mm-hmm. So tonight, the Miami Dolphins at the Jacksonville Jaguars, our Thursday night football game prediction, or you just want to give us something to watch for?
Well, the something to watch is clearly the beard versus the mustache.
Clearly.
That's been the story through this week. Fitzpatrick sounding off against mustachioed people. They're just people that can't grow sides to their beards. And then Minshew firing back saying, Well, you got to respect your elders, especially when they're really, really, really elder, like Fitz.
This is awesome. A couple charismatic quarterbacks here going at it. I am interested in this Jacksonville defense. You know, it's a rebuilding year for them. We talked about how Minshew is going to hurt the rebuild by playing well, but Miles Jack playing well for the first time in a few years. C.J. Henderson, the rookie corner, again, playing really well. Four pass breakups. Had that awesome week one against the Indianapolis Colts. As a Jaguars fan, I would be looking at, like, how are these young guys going to come together defensively?
Yeah, I'm interested in Minshew generally. I mean, I think this is a test. Like, we've talked about, he's better than tanking, but how good can he be? This is one of those games where you need to come out there and show you're better than Fitzpatrick. Like, Fitzpatrick is a steady old veteran, but he's not great. Like, you need to be better than that if you're going to actually be something for this team.
And then the big question for the Dolphins, when do we see Tua?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have an answer?
I don't, no.
Maybe tonight. How about this? 2 years ago, we predicted in week three, rookie Baker Mayfield comes in off the bench and leads the Browns to victory. And then, like, it happened.
Yeah. You want to try and catch lightning in a bottle twice?
Tonight, okay. Tua, off the bench, leads the Dolphins to victory. Just cut this. If it doesn't happen, we'll just cut this.
All right.
So that's your Thursday night game. A lot of you have already seen it. So hope you enjoyed it.
And that we were right.
And we were right.
And by we, I mean Steve.
All right, we're going to go game by game around the NFL. There are three games in particular that just obviously stand out as the best of the week. Let's start with the Green Bay Packers at the New Orleans Saints. New Orleans.
Yeah, you've got...
That's Al. That's how Al does it.
Yeah, that's true. I was gonna criticize you as being weird, but...
No, I guess if
Al New Orleans, does it, it's okay.
I say New Orleans. And Al says New Orleans, yeah. So that's how you have to do it.
Well, that's how the rest of the world says it.
Yeah, it's not right. It's Nolens. You gotta go Nolens.
Okay.
All right. We're gonna talk both quarterbacks, yeah. Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees. Mm-hmm. Where do you want to start?
Brees.
Okay.
He's done. It's over. Good night.
Stop it.
Old man Brees.
Stop.
Get him out.
I expected more from you. No. I expected more from you. Like, you're no different than Max Kellerman or Skip Bayless. Like, there's no analysis to age equals 41, two bad games, done. There's more to that.
Okay. You want the actual analysis?
Yes.
For the last 2 years, late in the season, Breeze has looked like this, right? But early in the season, he's looked fine. In fact, for three quarters of the season, he's looked fine. And then late in the year, it's fallen off a cliff, and it's like, that's disappointing. But don't worry, next year he'll be back again, and we'll get going. Last year was more concerning than the year before, because last year he had like a five-week holiday in the middle of the season. Injured his thumb, wasn't throwing, had a chance to chill and not wreck the arm, and yet still fell off a cliff late in the season, right? That's kind of worrying, because that means the arm is on like a pretty short or a pretty low pitch count before it just falls off a cliff.
Agree with that point.
This season, you've got that guy in week one and two. There's been no like honeymoon period where you get great Drew Brees for 3 months and then it falls off a cliff. It's already over the cliff. It's lying at the bottom of the cliff in flames, having plunged over last season, and nobody's put it back together again in the offseason. So right now, your franchise quarterback, the guy that is supposed to lead you to the second Super Bowl ring, the whole thing has been built for 2020, right? This team is so all in on 2020 that they tried to like fiddle the rules a little bit by like a sign and trade deal to bring people in to get people under the salary cap, right? That is how all in for 2020 they are. But the NFL was like, no, you can't do that. So they're so all in for that. And yet right now, the guy that's supposed to take them there is the biggest drag on the team. The quarterback can't win the way he's playing. They couldn't beat the Raiders playing the way he's playing.
All right. There's no doubt he hasn't played well. 60.6 grade. That's 30th in the league. I am concerned, but I'm not ready to write him off. I'm not throwing him out like everyone else is.
Okay.
Because they can still win. They're going to be really limited. They can't throw the ball down the field very well. It's still not as bad as it looks. The misses that looked terrible on broadcast included two passes to Jared Cook where he's stopping on routes, Josh Hill stopping on routes. There's miscommunications going on there. It's not like the dude's missing by a mile. I'm more concerned with his short area accuracy and the stuff that he's normally just unbelievable at. He looks rushed. All that said, here's why I'm not ready.
Those are disconnected, though.
No, I know. And again, and our guy, Seth Galina, who we just hired this past year, you know, lifelong Saints fan, and he had to write the terrible article about how Drew Brees is declining. I get it, and he didn't like it. And his biggest point was he's not making the throws that he normally makes. He's not pulling the trigger on the seam and the deep out and all that stuff. All that said, it's not like this is the worst stretch of play we've ever seen from Drew Brees. You know, 2015, he was throwing legit ducks. Like, it looked like his arm was going to fall off. He sat out a game. He bounced back. He was fine. I'm willing to give it some more time. Whether he can adjust a little bit, whether this offense can still succeed up to 20 yards, and even if they're limited down the field, they can scheme it up and be okay. Like, I'm willing to give it a little bit more time because there's a track record of success with Brees.
The problem is, the older the guy gets, the less likely it is that he's going to bounce back.
Right? I understand.
At some point, you're going to hit that cliff. And, I mean, I asked you the other day, explain to me the difference between Drew Brees right now and Peyton Manning when he hit the wall, right? Because same idea, right? You saw it coming late the season before, and it's like, well, he's bounced back before, he's come back. Like, there's no reason it should happen right now, and yet eventually it does to everybody except Tom Brady, apparently. But Brees is in the same boat. We saw it coming for 2 years now. We've seen it coming. Now it's here, and he doesn't have the arm to make the throws, right? And people, the last place the arm strength shows up is on the deep ball, right? The fact that he's uncorked one down the field, you know, and completed a pass, forget that. Anybody can throw deep down the field. That is the last place arm strength shows up. Where it shows up first is when you have to try and rifle one in, first off platform from
velocity.
Weird angles. B, then just trying to hit the angle, right? The 15-yard deep out is the traditional NFL throw that we talk about. But he's missing like 5 yard outs from the far hash because the ball's underthrown. He can't get it there anymore. And I think now it's in his head because I drew up this little slider thing on Twitter, right? If you've got arm strength, you've got accuracy, and then you've got like decision making and anticipation, just generally where you're putting the ball. I think you can be good if your slider is turned up on 2 out of those 3 things.
Right.
But if it's turned down on 2, you're done. It doesn't matter what the third one is. You're sunk.
The two are Minshew, anticipation and accuracy with no arm strength.
But you need 2, right? Now, we know that Brees has no arm right now, so one of them is gone. And his calling card throughout his career has been that pinpoint accuracy. Guy's been the most accurate quarterback in the NFL forever. But he isn't right now. His accuracy is not where it's been, and I think it's because like the arm isn't there anymore. So he just can't get it where he's used to getting it. And if he doesn't have the accuracy as well, now you only have one of the sliders up, and that's not good enough to be where he needs to be.
And I guess my point is, I don't know that the accuracy is going to be that bad the entire year.
Oh, man, I don't have a cough button.
You don't? Don't cough. Anyway, with Brees, I think I have a theory, and I put this out on Twitter, too. People are asking me to explain it.
Okay.
I have a theory that it's not just velocity, right? With Peyton Manning, you clearly saw velocity's gone, right? But I think there's also just reaction time. As we age, Sam, you also are a little bit worse in your reaction time and general overall athleticism. So while in theory, Drew Brees and Tom Brady, right, you can't throw anything at them they've never seen. Overload blitz, you know, disguise, there's nothing they haven't seen. They will recognize everything, but can they react to it quickly? I think Brees looks rushed. And I've used that phrase on Brady throughout the years with quarterbacks in general. Sometimes they just look rushed. Their mind is not connected to their body like it used to be, or their body can't move as quickly as it go through progressions or get your footwork in order. I think that's a bigger issue with Brees. And here's what I'm just going to say. As an elite quarterback like Brees, you always make the Peyton Manning example, can you recognize that, adjust, realize maybe you got to do stuff quicker, have even more anticipation? I'm going to give him a chance to adjust. That's what I'm saying.
So here's the other thing, though. I asked you before, can you tell me the difference between Peyton Manning's decline and this decline? And I'll give you one. Peyton Manning had Brock Osweiler as his backup, right? So at no point was there ever a serious consideration of benching him. Even when he got injured and was missing time and Osweiler came in and didn't play worse, right? There was no drop-off with Osweiler as the quarterback. There's still no discussion about, well, when Peyton's back, do we put him back in the lineup? Of course he's back. He's Peyton Manning, and Brock Osweiler is Brock Osweiler. That's not what is here in New Orleans. They have Jameis Winston and apparently the second coming of Steve Young as the two backup options, right? At some point, that's a far more real conversation than it was with Peyton Manning. There is, particularly with a team that knows they've loaded up for a Super Bowl, like, this is your one shot at this. So how long do you give him playing at this level before you say one of these guys gives us a better shot to win games?
The Broncos loaded up that year too. I mean, they went all out. T.J. Ward in free agency. They went crazy in free agency. They were
But nobody's ever loaded up the way the Saints
have. The Saints are in a special boat. We talked months ago about load management, too. We said if you legitimately are trying to win a Super Bowl, Saints, do you sit Breeze five games? Do you actually do that? And they have the quarterbacks to do that. You could have a Jameis.
Right.
You made the point. You said Jameis up to the 20 and Taysom Hill in the red zone?
Yeah.
Have you gone full Bill Walsh on us?
I looked up what Drew Brees' numbers in his declined periods. So late in the last 2 years and the first two games of this season, I looked up what his numbers were in the red zone because I was genuinely thinking about pitching this idea of Jameis between the 20s and Drew Brees in the red zone. Like, if maybe that would be the answer, right? Just take all the hard stuff out of Drew Brees off his shoulders and let him just execute in the red zone, but is great in the red zone as ass as well during this period. So.
Well, they've been taking him out of the red zone. They've been already taking him out for Taysom Hill for a whole bunch of stuff.
Here's the thing, though. If you I need the cough button today. If you have the PFF podcast, if you're listening right now, dive back, listen to our podcast special on Joe Montana and Steve Young. Bill Walsh would be benching Drew Brees this season. There is not a doubt in my mind that Bill Walsh would sit this guy down if he continues to play like this.
He would have seen three throws in training camp and would have been like, nope, I'm out.
Steve Young 2.0, get out there. But like, I'm just saying, so two games, I can see your case for let's give him a little bit longer. If he goes out there, plays exactly the same against Green Bay.
In a dome.
Yes, and Green Bay being one of the other competitors in the NFC, and if they blow them out of the water, you have to make a move then because you've just seen that you can't beat teams like that with a quarterback playing like this.
Jameis would be fascinating in this offense. Let's go to the other side of the ball with the Packers. Aaron Rodgers, our highest-graded quarterbacks, just incredible. Highest-graded quarterbacks in each of the first 2 weeks, of course, our highest-graded now through 2 weeks. The biggest difference for Rodgers, I keep coming back to, special stuff has always been there. He's playing within structure. He is getting rid of the ball faster than ever, 2.5 seconds. He's seventh fastest in the league. It's not his game historically. It's let's extend, let's hold on the ball, let's make big plays. But the fact that he's doing that, scary. That's 2014. That's 2011. Those are his MVP season type of style, the ability to win within structure and outside of structure. So he's been awesome.
It's funny. We've had this debate about what is the problem in Green Bay. Is it Aaron Rodgers? Is it the offense? Is it the receivers? What is it? And every year you can make this argument that, well, it's a bit of both, right? It's some of Rodgers, it's some of the receiving help, it's some, like, and then this season it's like, well, Rodgers has turned it around. He's the only thing that's different because all they did is draft like his replacement and a bunch of bit parts to the offense, so it has to be him. But the offense is structurally changed as well, right? This season, bunch formations, you know, it's one of those ways of like scheming up receivers because you get them free releases off the line. You cause some chaos amongst the DBs trying to cover them all. You make them sort of stick to these very rigid rules so they don't all run into each other essentially when the routes cross. Bunch formations. This year, they're fifth most in the NFL in terms of percentage. The 3 years before that, 22nd.
Wow.
This year, motion, pre-snap motion and shifts. They're second in the NFL in terms of usage. Last 3 years, 20th. So the offense has done what everybody has been sort of asking it to do, which is, look, these are free ways of scheming you extra yardage and open receivers. Why would you not be using them? And for years they haven't, and it's always been part Rodgers, part the fact that they're not giving him these free plays. Now they're finally giving him these free plays, and I suspect he's, you know, on this revenge tour, and suddenly you get 2011 MVP lighting everybody on fire, Aaron Rodgers.
Jordan Love, most valuable player in the NFL.
Oh, God.
No, I've heard Rodgers talk about that. And he said, I've always been of the mind, I don't like the motion and stuff because I want to see the defense.
Right.
Right. And that was Peyton, right? Peyton, for years, they ran two formations. He knew what the defense was, and he just did the opposite of what they were playing because he could see it. So some quarterbacks actually like the static look. Rodgers says, now the motion look gives you tells and it just gives you more information to use and schemes guys open. Green Bay is using it really well. Rodgers has adjusted really well. It's going to be an awesome game, I think. Packers and Saints. It's a huge game for the Breeze narrative. It's a huge game for the Saints looked like they're loaded up, right? The best team in the NFC. Are they really? Or is it the Packers? Who do you like in this one? Saints by three, by the way. Hold on.
Yes.
Vegas is saying, I'm not done with Breeze yet. Right. And I know they're not fully adjusting for home field advantage right now this year either. They're saying, we're not done with Breeze yet. And Michael Thomas, you know, still not back.
There's a couple of lines in this week that I find amazing, and this is one of them. It is in New Orleans, but there's, you know, it's not like it's a packed stadium with noise. This, I think Green Bay should be favorites for this game. Forget, like, against the spread. Three points for the Saints, given what we've seen from them so far, is nuts. The Packers are better. Aaron Rodgers is light years better than Drew Brees right now, and that, frankly, is the biggest needle mover of all of it. One last point about this, right?
Yeah.
If you're benching Drew Brees, which guy do you put in?
Jameis.
God.
Absolutely Jameis.
Coward.
Jameis and his aggressiveness in an offense. Last year, Drew Brees and Teddy Bridgewater, 1-2 for most open throws. Open throws as a percentage. That's a scheme thing and a playmaker thing. If you give that to Jameis, yeah, he's going to throw some tight window stuff in there that he shouldn't throw. He is going to put up 5,000 yards again.
Where's Jameis's comparison to a Hall of Famer 2.0? I'm just saying, we got Steve Young 2.0 over here. Jameis is just Jameis.
Yeah, there's no. Vinny Testaverde? Is Vinny in the...
Vinny 2.0?
That's his comp. Jameis still has that in him. I'm taking Green Bay.
Yes.
In this one. One more underrated part. Aaron Rodgers in his hard count and all that stuff that he's so good at, mm-hmm. instead of only having 8 games to
works
do that
everywhere.
This year,
yeah.
16. Have I already said that on here?
I think so.
I'm going to say it every single week.
Okay.
Every road game, I'm going to talk about Rodgers and the hard count. All right, so we're both taking Green Bay in that. Let's go out west. Dallas Cowboys at the Seattle Seahawks.
Mm.
I check the over-under for this. It's got to be 100. Dallas is depleted in the secondary.
Yep.
Awuzie's out. Everybody's hurt. Seattle can't cover anybody.
Nope. Or rush the passer.
So two stories that are huge. QBs, Dak and Russell Wilson. But I want to talk about Seattle's defense for a second. They bring in Jamal Adams, and I think we were sitting here thinking, what are they going to do? Is he just going to play strong safety? They play cover three every single down. They have completely changed their defense for Jamal Adams. They're blitzing 10% more than they were last year. They've completely changed what they do. And I think we saw against the Patriots on Sunday night, when Jamal Adams is in and around the line of scrimmage and they're delay blitzing him or bringing him off the edge or lining him up on a bat, whatever, he is creating havoc in the box. But then he also went and covered Julian Edelman. Like, whatever they're doing for the scheme, building around Jamal Adams, they're also putting themselves in mismatch disadvantages. So they need to figure that out, because it doesn't matter if he's blitzing 11 times a game and getting some pressure. Like, that's cool and all, but if you're going to give up 400 yards through the air, that's not going to work either. So Seattle's got to figure out defensively. I don't see either defense stopping the opposing offense.
Seattle has no pass rush, zero. Jamal Adams is leading that defense in total pressures with 7, I think. Bruce Irvin is second with 4, and he just tore his knee. The next highest guy, I think, is Bobby Wagner with 3. Like, there's no defensive lineman is able to rush the passer on this team. The best play of LJ Collier's career was the last play of the game against the Patriots, where he submarined Cam Newton and took
that was nice.
In the run game.
Yeah.
But the guy, zero pass rush. So they are using Jamal Adams as their primary pass rusher. They are scheming up linebackers to try and get favorable matchups on running backs, because that's the only pressure they're able to get on the quarterback. Like, at some point, you need to get something. Like, somebody on the defensive line needs to be able to win. There's one thing saying coverage is more important than pass rush, but if you don't have any pass rush, it doesn't matter how good your coverage is. Like, if the quarterback has all damn day to pass, he's going to find someone.
Cam Newton had all day plus room to maneuver the pocket. That's the thing, right? There is literally no push. And to go back to our famous pass rush versus coverage debate, Baltimore did it 2 years ago. But Baltimore, and they said, we're going to get these great guys in the secondary. They have no horses up front. And they schemed up pressure. But they blitzed 50% of the time. And that's their scheme. That's what they do. They twist, they stunt, they blitz. They're using safeties like linebackers. Like, that's kind of what they do in Baltimore. And it's always been a part of their identity. This was going to be even more of a challenge for Seattle, because they've been a team that's been dependent on a four-man rush. Their scheme was so good. When they had the Legion of Boom, they also had a great defensive line, right? So it's always been coverage and pass rush tied together in Seattle.
Yeah.
So now they have to play this different game. This isn't in their nature. I respect them trying. Like, it's, you know, they're trying to, you know, scheme it up and blitz in 39% of the time. That's about fourth or fifth in the league. It's tough. And their coverage, and plus coverage is tough to predict. So when you have Quentin Dunbar back there, can he keep it up?
It's a challenge. Yeah, the difference between... It's essentially a similar game plan to what the Ravens are doing, but for a different reason. Baltimore is, everything they're doing works in concert, right? They are throwing blitzes at teams at an insane rate, the second most in the league this year, first most in the league a year ago. but they're not taking resources out of the secondary to do it, right? They are rolling things and covering up the back end and getting like the right numbers are in the right place in the secondary so they're not exposed. Seattle is trying to do a similar thing for a similar reason in terms of neither of them have great defensive linemen rushing the passer. Baltimore is way better this year than they were last season, but right. Same origin point of the idea. But they're, what's that phrase? They're robbing from Peter to pay Paul, right? They are taking resources out of the secondary to throw it at the quarterback and try and generate pass rush. They're not, it's not working in concert. They're just taking resources out of the back end, throwing it at the front end because there's nothing right. coming from the front end. And that's not, that doesn't work the same way as the Ravens defense does.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think I mentioned the other day, Dallas fumbled three times, had a failed fake punt and scored 40.
Yeah.
They, you know, both of these teams have played Atlanta so far.
That'll help.
They might both go over 40 again. Russell Wilson, number two graded quarterback so far. You got their group of playmakers with DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, David Moore, what he's done. Fantastic. The difference in Seattle, I got to go on Seattle radio every week, and it's like, Russell Wilson, 140 passer rating. It's beating Rodgers. It's beating everybody. Why is he not number one? I was like, the difference in Seattle this year is they're scheming up. For all the crap Brian Schottenheimer takes, they have so far a schemed up screen pass to Chris Carson, a wide open drag route for a touchdown. They've got a wide open pass in the flat to Chris Carson. So Russell Wilson is cooking and he's great and well and all that stuff. And they're scheming up and giving him free touchdowns too this year.
Yeah.
That's what makes this passing offense really dangerous. Wilson plus everything around him. And I think Dallas is starting to look like we expected, right? The three wide receivers that are tough to cover, especially if you're Seattle right now. I don't see how the defenses have a chance here.
No, and the Seahawks still don't have anyone they trust covering the slot. I mean, Jamal Adams has been doing it at times. Like they're just stuck for ways to cover the slot. They don't have like a legitimate nickel bank that they trust to just go out there and play slot coverage. They're trying to, again, do it with scheme and do it with confusion. And you're now playing Dallas, who runs three deep with like top-end receivers. Like who the hell is covering CeeDee Lamb or Michael Gallup or Amari Cooper in the slot, let alone out wide? You're right. I think both these teams are going to go for, you know, a million points or so,
yeah,
give or take.
We're going to be at halftime. It'll be like 7-3. You know how it usually goes.
Yeah.
So Vegas has that at 5 as of right now. Seattle by 5 mm-hmm. at home. I think there will be a lot of points scored. I think Dallas is going to keep it close. I don't think that's crazy. Seattle by a score or whatever. But man, Dallas and the hip. If they pull out the hypnotizer, you know what the difference might be here though. Pete Carroll's game management versus Mike McCarthy's game management.
That'll be
through 2 weeks. Mike McCarthy has made, in particular, two really good decisions. One worked, one didn't. Fourth down decision didn't work week one against the Rams.
I mean, he's made more than that because they went for two fake punts. He's in that classic category of he's making the right decisions but the wrong execution half the time.
Yeah, I'm more talking about just from like a...
No, I get it. But like it's not just a binary thing, right?
Yeah.
Go for it, yes or no. You also need to figure out how you're going for it, right? It's not just good enough to say, the numbers say we go for this, ergo we go for it. It's like, yeah, but what are you calling in order to go for it? Because that's kind of relevant, right? There's no point in going for it if you're pulling out something useless that's never going to have a shot of converting. He's making good analytical decisions, but right now the play calling isn't matching them.
So I think it could come down to something like that. Going for two down nine, going for it on fourth down. You got two offenses getting after it. If Dallas is going to cover or win, I think it comes down to Mike McCarthy making one of those decisions, and it works out for him. I still like Seattle in this game,
though. Same. You mentioned the hypnotizer. Just a little tease for people. Stick around to the end of the show because we've got a little audio montage to play us out that features your hypnotizer.
Sam is not on the audio visual team here. He's not technically there, but he has been working hard on this stuff. Sam has put the time and effort
Most of the time and effort goes in just understanding how in God's name the program works.
You got to hear it. Sam is doing a great job. If you are a Xennial like us.
I thought we were, what was the thing I said? The Oregon Trail.
Oregon Trail generation.
Generation, which is the new one on me.
No, we are either, whatever. We're Xennial or if you are if you are in the 7 years either side of our age, you will love all of the montages Sam's been working on here.
Yeah, so far nobody knows the songs I'm using. I think that's chiefly because they're not the same age.
You should
as
have
us.
Stuck with Shimmer by Fuel. That was awesome.
I can't use Shimmer every week. I have to come up with a different tune.
You could do Shimmer every week.
No.
It's a good song. All right, we're both taking Seattle on this one. The other huge game that we're going to give a little extra time to. This is awesome. Week three, we get to see this again. Kansas City Chiefs at the Baltimore Ravens. They're back again. Last year, the Chiefs beat the Ravens. It was by far Lamar Jackson's worst game. Mm. It was not even close. And statistically, he bounced back at the end of the game with like two lucky prayers that actually saved his stats a little bit, but it should have been way worse. So he graded in the 30s against Kansas City. All that said, I can see the spreadsheet. I see who you're picking here. Vegas has Baltimore by 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
They're at home. And Kansas City is coming off of two games where they pulled away from the Houston Texans, but it was different. It was the run game. It wasn't the pass game. They just went to overtime against the Chargers and rookie Justin Herbert. I think everybody thought that Kansas City was the best team in the league coming in, right? They're coming off the Super Bowl. Nope. Mahomes at quarterback. Have they lost a little luster?
I thought Baltimore was the best team.
So you're just sticking to it. You're sticking with Baltimore all the way, right?
Now, it is interesting. Like, this is a fascinating game because I think you're right. What the most interesting thing is that they gave Lamar Jackson his toughest game. On the other hand, and the weird thing is, so Kansas City, when they've struggled, it's been the same scenario, right? It's the Chargers and the 49ers in the Super Bowl who have been able to actually rattle Patrick Mahomes and cause him problems and slow down that offense. And it hasn't been quite enough because late in the game, you lapse for a play. And that's all you need to do against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. And they beat you for the big score. And
that's all you have to do.
Now you're done, right? But I actually think that fundamentally the right way of attacking them is the Ravens way, not what we've seen from the 49ers and the Chargers. Not that that's not the right way, but I think that's just most teams aren't even capable of coming close to that, right? You need an insane ability to pressure with just four to get anywhere near that, and most teams don't even have a prayer.
Yeah.
The Ravens, on the other hand, I think is an easier thing to achieve in terms of the pressure is easier to get because you scheme it up. You're just confusing their protection packages. Like everything the Ravens do with creepers and with blitzing and with all those things up front, it's designed to mess up protection calls, right? And just cause confusion and win because guys are not where they should be or the blocking is screwed up and you get free rushers. That's a way easier way of winning in pass rush than it is beating all pro linemen like Mitchell Schwartz, right? That's a tougher ask. If you've got a Joey Bosa, you might get some joy, but it's still pretty rough going. So that part is easier. And then I still believe that the single biggest fundamental advantage you have in trying to beat the Chiefs is ball control on your side of the ball and just keep that offense off the field as much as humanly possible.
Oh, here we go.
And when they get on the field, you just need one stop. If you can get one stop, now you can keep them off the field for like almost a whole half and frustrate them and start them feeling some pressure that they actually need to score the next time they come out in the field. And I think the Ravens are better equipped to do that than anybody. So
the Chargers did that to a point. They had some long
drives
in there.
Yeah, that's why they ran it close, right? But I think the Ravens, that's what they do week in, week out. Like that's their game, right? Most they don't need to change anything is what I'm saying to have the best game plan to attack the Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, I think because we've seen 2 weeks of essentially Ravens dominance and 2 weeks of Kansas City, you know, not feeling as powerful as they have in recent years. Like, let's also not forget, this happened with Kansas City last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they lost to the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday Night Football. They lost to the Lions, right? Did they lose to the Lions? They lost early on. I mean, they showed, you know, weakness at points, and then they lost Mahomes to injury. So this stuff happens, right? You don't just dominate all 16 games all the time. So it's not like we're writing them off. I think what I'm wondering is where is the aggressiveness of the Kansas City offense? I couldn't believe the number that I saw the other day. Patrick Mahomes only 6.5% of his attempts 20 plus yards. That is near the bottom of the league. He's bottom five throwing the ball down the field. We saw the best throw of the week was him throwing on the run to Tyreek Hill. Mm-hmm. But this used to be like, we're just doing it. And if you just scored a touchdown and it took you 10 minutes, I don't care. I'm going to put a 75-yarder on you right now. We're going to attack back. It feels a little bit more horizontal, a little bit more controlled, a little bit more Tyreek Hill working horizontal rather than vertically, other than that other deep shot. Is there a reason why Kansas City
feels less aggressive? Is it because they drafted a first-round running back?
No. I think they just – I mean, the Chargers have a really good defense.
True.
Like they – the front four is insane. You and I both pulled out a very similar chart this week on Twitter that was sort of – one of them was blitz rate. I had pressure. You had stunt percentage, but the same kind of idea. My one, basically top right is Pittsburgh and Baltimore. They're getting a ton of pressure, and they're blitzing a load. But there's also sort of top left, which is you're still getting a lot of pressure, but you're doing it with just four. You're not blitzing.
Yeah.
And the Chargers are that team. They're the team that's getting a ton of pressure without blitzing a lot at all. And that, I think, in theory is still what you want to shoot for. Being able to get a ton of pressure without having to send extra guys. I don't think it's as simple as it used to be because I think teams like Baltimore and Pittsburgh are doing it in a sensible way. So it's not like you need to blitz to get pressure and therefore you're exposing yourself. I think they're way more in concert than that used to be as a dynamic. But in theory, I think you still want to be in a situation where you can get pressure without having to send extra guys. And the Chargers can do that. And oh, by the way, on the back end, they have a bunch of Pro Bowlers as well. So they are a really good defense, and I think it kind of makes some sense that they're able to slow down the Chiefs, right? Now, it's still not enough because Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill can just go out there and fire a 50-yard bomb at any given moment, and that's the game. But that, to me, makes sense. And the 49ers was a similar thing in the Super Bowl. Incredibly good defense will give them some problems. So I think overall, against a defense that isn't quite as good as that, we're going to see them let rip a little bit more.
Hey guys, we're going through every single game right now, and you can get your football on time this year with NFL Game Pass. You can catch every snap from every game with full game replays, or you can see all of the plays in just 45 minutes with condensed games. That's how you keep up with us here on the PFF NFL podcast. Watch every single game. You can relive all the gutsy calls, usually from Mike McCarthy, the crazy catches, the wild comebacks, also from Mike McCarthy, and the breakout stars from every game every single week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. NFL Game Pass is the only place you can replay every game all season long. You'll also learn from the league's best players with over 40 NFL Game Pass film session episodes, and you can go inside the game from a player's perspective as they break down the game's concepts and techniques. Learn from the best like Deshaun Watson, Stephon Gilmore, Davante Adams, and more. You can also learn from us here at the PFF NFL Podcast, but it's easier if you've seen every game like we have. NFL Game Pass also provides access to the entire NFL Films archive. So go to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops. Right, I'm going to be fascinated to see the other side of the ball as well. When Baltimore has the ball, they love to run the ball. Their guards haven't played as well as they have in the past, but they were back to form the other day, 230-plus yards on the ground. Kansas City has the lowest tackling grade in the NFL. Premium Stats 2.0, you go there, they're 29. 29 missed tackles for the Chiefs through two games.
It's not good.
That might be the difference there. It's Lamar in space. It's Mark Ingram getting downhill. Marquise Brown after the catch. I think that might be the difference. Kansas City has to tackle better, and whether the run game matters or not, against the Ravens it does. Like, you have to to give yourself a chance, you can't give up six a pop. You have to limit them at least a little bit. What are they going to – Derek Nnadi has turned into, like, that really good interior defensive run stopper that we expected coming out of college with no pass rush to it, but, like, he's the only guy above 70 run defense grade so far for the Chiefs. I mean, Baltimore, we might come out of Monday night being like, Baltimore imposed their will on the Super Bowl champs. We might have that. Am I down on the Chiefs? What am I doing? I mean, we're three Mahomes throws away from this being irrelevant.
Yeah.
But I'm just feeling Baltimore right now.
Same.
They're built to stop the Chiefs, to your point.
Agreed. I think the Ravens this season are setting up to be, I mean, they were last season. They had the best record. They were the juggernaut team, and then they got in a hole in the playoffs, and nobody remembers it because the narrative is Lamar can't win the postseason. But this was the most dominant team. Now, okay, the Chiefs lost Mahomes for a bunch of that, so they didn't have, it's not a like-for-like comparison, but the Ravens got better from being a juggernaut last season. I think that this team is teeing up to be just a dominant force this year, and the question is, that's awesome. Now can the Chiefs live with it? Can they match them? And do they get in a hole in the playoffs again? But Baltimore is a dominant team, and I think they are uniquely set up to actually counter what the Chiefs do.
I can't wait to see the cat and mouse game. How to, you know, matching up against Tyreek Hill, matching up against Travis Kelce. Kansas City hasn't gotten much from their other playmakers besides Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I want to say one positive thing about Kansas City. Fourth-round rookie, L'Jarius Sneed, because it makes me look good.
Yeah,
I mentioned him as a potential sleeper. He was a safety at Louisiana Tech last year, was previously a cornerback, and I was thinking, and Mike Renner said the same thing too, let him play outside corner. He had decent grades at outside corner. That's what they've done. He's got a freebie interception, but he had another decent one on Sunday. Pass breakup, 70 grade, third best on the Chiefs defense. So there's some positive energy for the Kansas City Chiefs, but I'm still picking the Ravens in this one.
Same. Are you buying the Clyde Edwards-Helaire nickname?
What is it?
The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
I'm a huge Fresh Prince fan.
Right?
I like it a lot.
Is that an homage to you, or is that like disrespectful?
Did you send me the thing that they forget that the Fresh Prince, the house, the mansions on like Airbnb or something?
No.
Oh, it is.
Yeah?
So
should we go stay?
Yeah.
Sweet.
We could get some people together.
I assume
it's expensive.
If we do that, we've got to go and we've got to bring Austin so that you can recreate tossing
jazz out the window.
I think could literally pitch Austin out the door and we could get a great video of that.
I think we should record the podcast from there.
Yes.
We could do a couple. We'll get a couple episodes in the can. You know, get to take advantage of the Airbnb.
All right.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Yeah, I could buy it.
Okay.
I like it.
I like it too.
But I'm still picking the Ravens this week.
Yeah, same.
All right, we're going to go a little quicker through the rest of the NFL. Houston Texans at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Who made the schedule for the Texans? Are you kidding me?
Tough, right?
Chiefs, Ravens, and now the Steelers? Maybe the three best teams in the AFC?
Yeah. So you had, you know, the previous three is like the three obvious games that were the best three of the week. I thought this one had a shot. Like, this is why this is next up in the schedule that I created here. I was on the fence a little bit about whether this one should be in that group. I thought this, in theory, could be a really good game. The reason I went against it is, as much as on paper I like it, I just think that this is tough sledding for the Texans. Like, what we've seen from that offense in terms of they are not where they need to be yet. This idea of Deshaun Watson becoming a better player minus Nuke, if it's ever going to happen at all, it isn't anywhere near happening yet. He is not comfortable. He's not in sync. He's not in rhythm. He's not yet understanding where he needs to go with the ball when things start to break down.
He's not. It's
and,
true.
You know, Will Fuller had zero targets last week. None.
Oh, my
gosh. That's the dude that's supposed to be like, you know, if somebody's going to step up, right, minus Nuke, Will Fuller is the number one guy. He didn't get a target. Forget a catch.
The fantasy community was hilarious. After the one game, because it was only one game, it was like, Will Fuller, target share, target share. Half my timeline was Will Fuller's target share, which some of it's game flow and all. Like, they weren't necessarily scheming him up, and then he had nothing.
No targets at all, right? So that is not great to begin with. But then you face the Steelers, who are blitzing more than any team in the NFL.
And stunting.
They're at like 68%. It's insane.
Yeah.
They are coming after you. And if you're going to roll in there with an offense that's already a little bit out of whack and, you know, when things go wrong, you don't know where to go with the ball. Now you're facing a team that is going to make things go wrong as much as humanly possible. Like, unless something massive has turned around with this Houston offense in the last week, I don't see how to get anything going on offense.
Out of whack is the way to describe the Houston offense right now.
Okay.
Because when you go through the film, there'll be an open receiver, but then the offensive line's giving up pressure. And then there's an open receiver, there's no pressure, Deshaun Watson just misses the throw.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's pressure, there's no open receiver, Deshaun Watson still makes the throw, that incredible throw he made on Sunday, and it doesn't matter, he throws him open, and it's a big-time throw. It is all disjointed, and it's one of those things that's actually tough to quantify. It's not like the O-line's 25th in pass blocking grade. It's bad, but it's not like everything's bad. It's just on certain plays, there's one thing breaking down right now, which actually gives me a little bit of hope for the Texans going forward. I think the schedule will get easier.
Yeah.
They'll figure it out. I think they have a legit shot in this game. I think they have a shot. Like, if they won, I wouldn't be terribly surprised. But overall, I have more concerns about Houston's defense than even their offense, right? Just
the
coverage unit, all the entire back seven. Their linebackers are supposed to be a strength, and they're not playing well. Zach Cunningham, Bernardrick McKinney, I have concerns there.
The concern for them is that, yes, their schedule has been brutal, but you were a playoff team a year ago. If you're taking a step forward, the only step forward is to now be able to match the best teams in the league. And through two games, hell no. Through a third game, we expect not, like, you know what I mean? They're clear evidence that there is a big step between them and the teams they want to be in and around. And I don't see that reversing itself in this game. I don't see how that offense gets in sync. And you're right. I think the defense is going to have more than its hands full with the Steelers and their passing attack and the fact that they go 3-4 deep with receivers. Like, as much as in theory, I think this is kind of an interesting game, it really does look like it's setting up to be a fairly comfortable Steelers win.
But the Texans are going to be that team that starts 0-3, and before you know it, they're like 6-6.
Yeah.
And they're kind of back in the mix. TJ Watt, highest graded edge by far, 93.7. And then keep an eye on Big Ben. One good game throwing the ball. He had first quarter, not so good against the Giants. Finished strong. And then last week, got away with some bad decisions. Had one pick. That was on him. He is a little off last week, so still trying to figure out what Big Ben is as that receiving core does come together and makes them dangerous in Pittsburgh. It's the Steelers by 4 in this one, so Vegas thinks it's at least a little close. I'm taking Pittsburgh in this one. How about you?
Yeah, and the points.
And the points. Man, so you think Pittsburgh by a lot.
I don't see how the Texans live with it. I really don't.
We're going to come out of this game, Pittsburgh 3-0, and saying, are they up there with the...
Yeah.
Ravens and Chiefs and those
they
teams.
Probably are if that happens.
I can see that. Chicago Bears at the Atlanta Falcons. Atlanta by 3. So this is always fascinating, right? I always say week 2 is the week where you just, all right, week 1, it was just 1 week, and then teams start, they were playing on the road, then they're at home, and just different stuff happens. Week 3, though, always feels like something where you can overrate the record. And if you saw 2-0 Chicago against 0-2 Atlanta, you would immediately think, well, it's got to be the Bears. But I see here, we're both picking Atlanta, and I'm not completely buying into Chicago at 2-0.
Week 1 is overreaction week. Week 2 is what we think we're seeing for real. And then week 3 is how quickly can you come off your priors heading into the season, right? That's basically the first 3 weeks of any NFL season. This one is kind of interesting to me because we made the point that, look, Trubisky is playing better. Now, he's not playing great, but he's viable right now, right? And viability, the difference between where he was last year and viability is the difference between Chicago being a nothing, no-hope franchise.
I saw your article. I know.
And
I saw you
actually
that.
Legitimate, right? A playoff contender. What was fascinating to me, I watched the sound effects video that the NFL puts out every week. For some reason, it was like half an hour long this week.
Ooh, that's nice.
There was a big chunk on the Chicago game. And Khalil Mack goes up to Trubisky before the game, gives him a hug, and says something like, make me respect you this week. Right? Now, he kind of, I don't know if that triggered something in his brain. It was like, that's probably not a great encouraging thing to say. And it was like, you're the best at what you do out there, you know? Like the sort of thing that you normally say to the quarterback. But then it was like, make me respect you. Like, whoo, like that's not a... For a guy who doesn't want to hear, like, the TV saying mean things about him in the building, that's a hell of a thing to put in his head before the game.
You have other people on the sideline being like, we're not out of it. We have Tom Brady. Let's go. And then on this sideline, it's like, come on, dude, do something.
Right.
Finally, like, do something in year 4.
Before the game, he's like, just make me respect you. Look, I'm not looking for a lot here, but just make me not hate your ever-living guts
funny.
Out there.
I want to correct you a little bit. I think week 4, you have to come off your priors. I think week 3 is when your priors still matter. And our prior being...
I mean, Atlanta, after week 3. So we're in the same
after,
place.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can remember many times picking an 0-2 team to beat a 2-0 team.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because it's like your priors, like, it still matters. And Atlanta had to play Dallas and Seattle. I mean, granted, they completely blew the Dallas game, but they played two pretty good teams.
Mm-hmm.
So I like Atlanta in this. Their passing attack has been really tough. Calvin Ridley's our highest graded receiver. He is tearing it up. And it still comes down to Matt Ryan in the dome against Mitchell Trubisky. And I think
that is true.
I'll take Matt Ryan in that one.
But I will say that, look, Trubisky has been playing better through two games. He's been viable.
Yes.
If there's a defense to keep that going against, it's Atlanta, right? Like if for the last 2 weeks, he's actually been getting let down by his receivers rather than the other way around, right? If those receivers have the same kind of day against Atlanta's secondary that everybody else has been having so far, Trubisky should have another big game. And if they do, this Chicago team collectively is a lot better than people think it is.
Full credit to Trubisky again. And I said it the other day.
I think he looks confident. I think he's got a little bit more zip on the ball. And he was let down by his receivers, particularly, you know, dropped passes plus interceptions that shouldn't be on him, all that stuff. So he's playing better, but I like Atlanta in this one. Vegas has them by 3, so they're not buying into the records either just yet. All right, Los Angeles Rams at the Buffalo Bills. Now, this is another game. This is 2-0 versus 2-0. Mm. Another game that could have been up there. Stop screwing up the spreadsheet, Sam.
What did I do? I just...
Edit, undo.
Fixed.
Edit, undo. Thank you. What are you looking for in this game?
So, Stephon Diggs versus Jalen Ramsey. And even if it's not Stephon Diggs, like whoever ends up on Jalen Ramsey. That, in fact, not even Ramsey, period. The, Ramsey obviously is a superstar in that defense, but those young corners are actually playing pretty good, right? Troy Hill, Darius Williams is a guy that the PFF college grading loved. I'm actually really intrigued by that group. The Bills receivers are what we thought they would be. They can all get open. They can all get open at different levels of the defense. And the Rams cornerbacks are like a legit coverage unit.
I have a note on that right now. Seth Galina, who I mentioned earlier, has just sent me a message. Josh Allen is really... I don't want to say this.
Uh-oh.
Josh Allen's playing well. Let me start this by Josh Allen played a fantastic game last week against the Dolphins. Yeah. Seth's note to me right now is Josh Allen is really behind on every throw, but these guys are so wide open, it doesn't matter.
Stop it.
So all I want to say, the same stuff we've been preaching since the draft, before the draft, playmakers. Get playmakers. Dallas has 3. Buffalo has 3. We ranked them as our top 2 receiving units coming into the season.
All right. So
they are doing – the Buffalo front office deserves a ton of credit for bringing in Cole Beasley, John Brown, and Stephon Diggs over these last 2 years and building around Josh Allen.
So Steve has decided to take a giant steaming dump all over Josh
Allen. Let me tell you how awesome Josh Allen was.
On the other hand, I have extended an olive branch to the Bills fans.
I can't even Josh see Allen. It's because you muted all of them.
No, well, it's not. Luckily for them, it's not a sight required medium. It's audio. The end of this show, our audio montage will feature some nice sounds for Josh Allen.
Okay, that's good.
There you go.
I was very impressed. We've joked about arm strength before, and his arm strength in particular. Again, where it shows up is not at pro day throwing the ball 80 yards. Where it showed up the other day was the 47-yard touchdown where he's a little off platform, where he's got a guy bearing down on him, and he just kind of flicks it, and it's 47 yards.
Yeah.
His arm strength, but his touch on Sunday...
That's what I was going to say.
...was outstanding.
I will say that forget the fact that he's connected on a couple of these deep shots. Now... The one, the 47-yarder to Diggs, where he fired it into a window, that was back to, like, the old, like, frozen rope trajectory.
Yeah, you've got those.
And it worked. Like, you know, that was a small window to hit. You kind of needed to fire that in there. But there were a couple of throws where he put a hell of a lot more arc under it. And that's what you need, right? That Chad Pennington style of deep ball thrower, put air under it, give the guy time to figure out where it's going to go land and get there. Don't, like, if you fire it with that crazy low trajectory, There's no margin for error. If you're off, he's not getting there because you don't have time. It's coming in there at a million miles an hour. If you put air under it, you put some arc there, you give that guy time to adjust and end up where the ball is. He has been doing that more this year. Now, it's not, like I say, it's not universal. He's thrown some frozen ropes in there as well.
Right.
But the fact that he has made that adjustment is huge for the deep ball thing getting better right over the season.
And that goes back to what I said before the season, right? If he got better at the good stuff up to 20 yards, the stuff that's more consistent and is going to make up 70% of your throws, you'll even if you don't improve, you'll stumble into at least throwing a jump ball here and there that your receivers are going to win, or you're going to have receivers that are more open, the deep ball is going to catch up. So this year he has 7 completions on 20-plus yard throws. Last year he had 18.
Yeah,
7 already. This year already. He had 18 last year. So all that said... I'm still going to take the Rams. They got top 2 coverage grades in the league here. I love the way the Rams are playing defensively. I think they're just playing so controlled on offense, protecting Goff, and Goff is executing. I'm taking the Rams. Vegas has Buffalo by 2.5 at home.
I'm buying the Bills. I think the team collectively is for real. And look, Josh Allen's playing well.
You're a big travel guy, so.
Yeah, it's true. It's East Coast.
Washington, almost said it. Football team. At the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland by 7.
Renner was dropping those.
Was he?
Those R words left and right. Couldn't stop him.
That. Just can't do that. What do you like in this game?
So this is a fascinating game to me because week 1, Baker Mayfield against the worst defense in the NFL to try and get your crap together against, right? Baltimore, all the things we talked about, throwing weird stuff at you, just nightmare, collapsed. The entire offense was in ribbons. Bengals are the other end of the spectrum, right? Basically the best defense in the NFL to get your stuff together. Like, bad coverage, bad pass rush, all day, leaky run defense. You could, the entire offense was ahead of the chains. You could do whatever you like. And we saw from Baker that if you give him that platform, there's still signs of that old Baker Mayfield, the number one overall pick. It's still there. This, I think, is a good halfway house between the two, right? Washington has some not great coverage on the back end, but they have a front four that can get after you with just four. They will pressure him. They will give Mayfield an excuse to start bailing from the pocket. And that's all he's needed in the past, right? Is just give him an excuse and he'll start running around and make lean into his flaws. And even against Cincinnati, right? There were some plays. There was one play that kept coming up, and I think he made, like, it was a good play. He ended up making a good throw out of it. But there was like a little bit of pressure that came around the back of him, and his immediate reaction was just tear out of the pocket to the left sideline and keep running, right? Whereas actually, Jonah Williams was doing a pretty good job of guiding Carl Lawson, I think, around – no, who was it?
Jedrick Wills.
Yeah. Jedrick Wills was guiding Carl Lawson around the pocket and kept him going, right? So if Baker had just taken a slide step to the left and stayed where he was, he would have had all day in the pocket still. But his instinct, his immediate reaction is start running and don't stop until the play's over. Now, that against Washington, I think, is going to happen more. And he needs to show – there were a few plays against Cincinnati where he wanted to do that and then caught himself and stopped. He needs to show he can do that against a better pass rush.
I want to see Jedrick Wills, who we just mentioned, the rookie left tackle, go up against Chase Young, rookie on rookie. And Jedrick Wills has played pretty well so far, only given up a handful of pressures in two games. So I think it's going to be a good one. I'm taking the Browns in this one. Do you think they cover at 7?
No.
I think Washington has a chance to keep it pretty close as well. But I like Cleveland to win this game. They're going to come out of this maybe 2-1 with some optimism in Cleveland?
You would hope so, because if they don't.
If they don't, there's a lot of pessimism. You just lost to the WFT. Tennessee Titans at the Minnesota Vikings. Minnesota.
Dude, how is this line only 2.5?
I see your notes.
The Vikings are terrible.
They're not as bad as you think.
They really
are. They're not as bad as they look.
Look, all right.
If we're going to call Gardner Minshew tank-proof,
okay.
Cousins is tank-proof.
Oh, that's fine. Now, I'll phrase the question a different way. Is there a single area in which Minnesota has the advantage?
There is not.
Okay. At which point?
Dalvin Cook over Derrick Henry. I'd take Dalvin Cook over Derrick Henry.
That's who you're hanging your hat on. Okay.
Always Dalvin Cook.
And at that...
Safety.
Okay. So for that answer, 2.5 points is crazy.
Yeah.
The Titans are better everywhere. Everywhere.
This is the this is the classic 0-2 Minnesota has to be better than what they've shown.
Do they?
They're better than what they've shown.
They have no pass rush, no coverage, not a great offensive line, one receiver. They suck.
No, they'll be all right. They'll be all right. Huh. I mean, I like Tennessee to win. Tannehill was back to last year's form the other day against the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're doing a good job. They're scheming open receivers, plus Tannehill making plays under pressure and tight window throws in the red zone. Man, maybe he is Rich Gannon.
Rich Gannon.
Maybe he is.
I mean, he's
younger.
So far,
Rich Gannon.
He's so far been a hell of a lot closer to 2019 Ryan Tannehill than I would have expected.
He has. So we're both taking Tennessee. Any chance?
You give me crap for that.
I'm just saying Minnesota's better than they've looked.
I don't know that they are.
It'll be closer than you think.
I mean, Cousins will probably have a pass rating better than 15, I guess.
Yes. He'll have a nice 110 passer rating, and he'll have three. With like three garbage time touchdowns, it'll be closer than you think. It'll be 31-24 after it came out. Yeah, it was 31-7. From 31-7 to 31-24.
You're saying a 2.5 point line is
not. Minnesota's better than you think. I'm taking the Titans. The 2-0 Las Vegas Raiders are heading to New England to take on the Patriots. Patriots by 6 here. Vegas for real or what?
No, I don't think they're for real. I mean, this is not a bad team, but I don't, for real, it suggests playoff bound, making noise, challenging. I don't think they're in that category. You know, so to me, I was thinking about this today, right? The Derek Carr thing, the big narrative was, does Henry Ruggs fix Derek Carr in terms of deep downfield aggression, get him being a more aggressive quarterback firing down the field, right? And when you watch him, like, there are some deep shots in there, but it just feels wrong. And I was trying to figure out what it was, and it reminded me of this clip from Coming to America, right? You have seen Coming to America. You're Coming to America fluent. Hopefully a lot of our listeners will be. But let's play the clip, and then I'll talk you through exactly what it means. Tyler, hit it.
Are you able to follow the game, Akeem?
Oh, yes. I'm following the game quite well.
Are you saying Derek Carr doesn't even know what he's looking at? He doesn't even know what he's doing
a little bit
out there?
A little bit. So here's, it's like, yeah, sure. He understands. Like, it's Eddie Murphy. You know, he realized that he didn't have a clue what was going on, right? But you know, you understand that, like, I've got to make it look like I know what I'm doing. So every now and again, I'll just, like, jump up and cheer, right? Derek Carr understands that he should be going deep. So every now and again, it's like, well, I better fire a deep ball towards somebody. Otherwise, they're going to realize that I don't know what I'm doing here, right? So they know – I know I'm supposed to be doing it. So every now and again, I'm just going to heave one deep and, like, that's it. Checked. Done. I'm aggressive. I'm a franchise quarterback. Go me, right? But there's no rhyme or reason to it. Like, he's dropping back, passing up wide open deep shots to guys, multiple guys. There's a play where he's dropping back. Two deep guys are open, and he checks it down. But then every now and again, it's just like, oh, it's time to throw a deep shot. Otherwise, they'll realize that I'm not a franchise quarterback. It just feels wrong. You know what I mean?
That feels very Derek Carr.
That's what I'm saying.
He ended up throwing the ball okay the other night, but pocket presence was poor early. His overall grade wasn't as good as the stats. Here's the question I wanted to pose. DeSean Jackson has been the guy we've been chasing. All offseason, we're like, I want my DeSean Jackson, right? And the thing that made DeSean Jackson special, you go back through his career, oh, he was on the field for that 2013 Eagles team that completely overachieved offensively. Mm. The 2018 Bucks team that turned Ryan Fitzpatrick into like a Pro Bowl looking quarterback. Like, he's always a part of these high octane offenses. So far through 2 weeks, the Raiders, it's not like they're grading great across the board, but the production on the field is fantastic. EPA and all that stuff is among the best in the league. And I'm wondering if Ruggs is having that effect, especially like in week one. I mean, they've schemed it up for Ruggs. They're trying to free him up deep and use him in various ways. I'm wondering if he's actually having that impact so far. I think it's fascinating to watch here with Ruggs.
There's the other thing that sort of makes me talk about that Derek Carr thing is when I pulled up this passing map, there's like this insane cluster at 20 yards on the left hand side of the field. Like a target, you know, like an archery. You try and get the cluster as tight as possible, like bullseye. And I don't think he's completed one of them, right? But it's just, it's like every now and again, I just need to put the ball 20 yards on the left sideline because that's what I'm supposed to be doing.
Click on them, see what happens.
That's what I need to do. I need to watch them and find out what those plays are. But there's, what is there? Three, four, five, six targets in this insane cluster on the left. And it's just like every now and again, I've seen Peyton Manning go deep. That's what you're supposed to do as a quarterback.
From a New England standpoint, two things. Want to see if they come out. They were very controlled offensively until they unleashed Cam in the second half against the Seahawks. I want to see if they're more aggressive offensively, the way he threw the ball. And then defensively, Belichick likes to take away what you do well.
Yes.
Is he going to look at this like trying to cover Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce? I'm trying to cover Henry Ruggs and Darren Waller. And I want to see, because he'll throw two dudes on a tight end for the whole game. He doesn't care. So I'm curious to see what Belichick does defensively. Who is the bigger threat? Is it the speed and the big plays that Derek's not going to throw? Or is it the tight end that's his binky underneath that he loves to throw to? I'll be interested to see that defensively.
You throw Gilmore onto Waller.
Yeah, I saw some New England media talking about that, and I could absolutely see that happen. Because you're not going to put Gilmore on Ruggs. He doesn't cover the speed guys. They have other guys to do that. I could absolutely see that. And, you know, Bryan Edwards is good, but I don't know if you want Gilmore on him. Shop local with Visa to help support your community because where you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be. Help support your local businesses. Whether they're your corner stores, coffee spots, or favorite shops, local businesses have always been on your team supporting you and your community. They remember your order, and they call you by name. Always giving back, making a difference, and going that extra mile. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So let's be there for them. The next time you go shopping, help your team score and choose to shop at local businesses. While you're there, look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be. Official partner of the NFL. New England by 6. I'm taking New England to win. I could also see them covering. I think Vegas, they're not as good as their 2-0 record. Sorry, Raiders fans. Raiders fans get so mad. They want us to give... Good job, Raiders. You're 2-0. Credit given.
Mm-hmm.
I think New England wins this.
Yeah, it's good. Derek Carr is a good quarterback. He's just, there's something missing. There's something not there, and that's why it feels like he's Eddie Murphy from Coming to America.
and he's blocked me. The San Francisco 49ers at the New York Giants. We have Joe Montana and Phil Sims going. Every now and again, I just flash back. Those must have been like all the Lawrence Taylor versus Joe Montana games and all that through the years. But it's Jimmy Garoppolo and Daniel Jones. Garoppolo's banged up. Everybody else is banged up on the 49ers. Nick Bosa is on IR. I really wanted to see Nick Bosa go up against Andrew Thomas, the rookie left tackle for the Giants, who struggled a little bit against Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn and the Bears last week. I want to see how Andrew Thomas bounces back here for the Giants. It's a very specific thing, but I want to see.
Yeah, I bet Andrew Thomas didn't want to see that.
No,
I imagine he's pretty happy. The 49ers just got absolutely wrecked by injuries last week. You know, Bosa going down, Thomas going down, running backs dropping left and right. They're already down receivers. Like, they got pretty badly beat up. And yet, you would think they're still significantly better than the New York Giants. The most interesting thing, though, is Jason Verrett practiced in full.
Keep an eye on him.
He could
be the key. He could be the key to the NFC. Verrett and Sherman just carrying the Niners defense.
Over under, right? Let's assume practice in full means he's going to start, play. How many snaps before he gets hurt?
Eight. He's got eight snaps in him.
There's
endurance wise. He hasn't played a full game in 12 years.
We haven't done it in a while. There's a rugby player called Peter O'Mahony who every single game will at some point be getting his head checked, right? Like, he's taking a bang to the head. Medical guy comes out, you know, takes a look at him. So I just like, there's a text chain WhatsApp group with a bunch of friends. It's just like 26 minutes, Peter O'Mahony head check every game. That's the Jason Verrett thing. How many snaps before he goes off hurt?
That was Sergio Brown used to be like that for the Patriots. There'd always be a timeout because Sergio Brown's hurt.
Right.
You're always, let's get to our Budweiser commercial because Sergio Brown's down. I'm taking the Niners. Vegas has the Niners by 4, despite the cross-country trip. This is brutal. They got to go to New York two weeks in a row.
And they can't stay because of the COVID stuff.
Yeah.
Before, you would just stay on the East Coast for the week, practice there, and, you know, they've had to go back across the country and then back again.
It's a lot of travel.
That sucks.
It feels like one of those games where Danny Dimes has 4 of those and the Giants keep it close.
Possible.
This is one of those weeks. You just, crazy stuff happens. This could be one of those crazy games. I'm still going to play it safe and take the Niners, though.
Yep.
Cincinnati, hometown Bengals at the Philadelphia Eagles. Eagles by 5.5 here. The 0-2 Eagles by 5.5. Well, it's because they're facing our Bengals.
Yeah, but even so, again, like, this is one of those ones where, right, week two, it's, let's try and is what we think is happening for real. And week two, Carson Wentz has been awful through 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So Vegas clearly thinks that, all right, that's not for real. At some point, Carson Wentz is going to go back to playing reasonably well, and the Bengals are still bad, so the Eagles will win. But, like, that would take some hell of a turnaround from what we've seen. And look, the last week, the Bengals were exactly the tonic that the Cleveland Browns needed to get their stuff in order. This is a chance for Philadelphia to do the same thing, but, like, it's a chance they need to take because, like, Carson Wentz has just been miserable. And it's clearly weighing on them, right? Because Doug Peterson is getting testy as hell against, like, questions.
I just saw him,
like, guys missing. He's like, have you ever played in the NFL? They're not layups. Like, dude, they are. Come on, look. I haven't played in the NFL, but at some point I recognize that I can make a 12-yard pass to a guy in a bubble screen. Like,
yeah,
it's not hard.
You don't, I mean, to know if something's easy or not, you just have to see how well somebody does against his peers.
Yes.
So let me give you a number. Against his peers, Carson Wentz, his peers being NFL quarterbacks, that's the standard here.
Mm-hmm.
The standard's not
right.
You
standard isn't, yes,
or
us.
Reporter. In the grand scheme of the world, Carson Wentz is a
hell
awesome
of an
quarterback.
Athlete,
this year,
great
this
player,
year, Carson
right
Wentz is one of the best quarterbacks in the world.
Yes.
Against his peers, he's the worst, and he's got the lowest PFF grade, and he also has the highest percentage of uncatchable passes, over 30%. So that's Carson Wentz so far. I don't expect that to continue. I think more concerning, though, is since week 11 of last year, Wentz's grade is 55.
Yeah, but yeah, last
I know
year,
they had nobody to throw to.
Greg Ward is their number one receiver.
I know, but we also pride ourselves on, like, if you make a good throw, or if you, we're going to take care of you. Like,
but
you
know,
fumble issues. I know it affects it, but 55.
Yeah,
55. Like, if it was 65, it's like, okay, 55 since that point.
Right, and if his number one receiver had been like, you know, one viable guy, I might be inclined to go with you. But it was like, you know, it was so bad that I think you have to toss out last year, even if it's lining up with what's happening this year.
You know what it reminds me of? Because when Carson Wentz came out, there was a lot of bad things that you saw on film, right? Like the way the motion and accuracy stuff was off, but overall he was good and he had this high end, right? It reminds me of Baker, where there weren't like a ton of weaknesses necessarily, but all these weaknesses are happening like times 10 right now, which is the footwork and the short area accuracy and all this stuff. So I expect him to bounce back, but man, it's concerning through 2 weeks where Wentz is. Don't forget, last year at this time, Kirk Cousins was coming off like a 4-fumble game. Yeah. He was our lowest graded quarterback. Like, well,
somebody asked me, like, what the hell is it with Kirk Cousins in week twos?
Yeah, right.
It's just like 20 grade, awful performance, wretched.
His last 2 weeks.
From week two onwards last season, he was like the number one graded quarterback in the NFL.
Early in the season, there's pressure, right? And then the pressure's off,
then he's done.
You set low expectations early. It's all about expectation management. God. That's Kirk is like the key with that. And then let's see if they can protect Joe Burrow.
Yeah, that'd help.
Let's see. That'd be nice. Uh-huh. Taking Philadelphia here.
Also, just don't like, can they have a game where he doesn't have to throw 65 times? That would help.
Crazy. A little Joe Mixon for my fantasy team. Is that what you're trying to say?
No.
Oh. New York Jets at the Indianapolis Colts. Colts by 10.5. 10.5, and the Colts aren't that good.
No, the Jets are terrible.
What are you looking for? What are you watching in this game when you watch this game?
Mekhi Becton. Is he for real? I mean, he had a great game last week. On the other hand, he basically had the day off from the point Nick Bosa went down hurt and Solomon Thomas as well. Now you're blocking like Kentavious Street for the whole game. Like that's an easier go of it than it would have been with Nick Bosa. So now you go up against the Colts, you get a little visit from Justin Houston amongst others. Now you've got, that's an assignment. Now you got to see if you can still do it.
I'm with you. My whole thing with Becton is he looked like he was blocking high schoolers in college.
Yeah, which basically,
but he did that last week too, the front side of zone where he pancaked a guy. Like those blocks don't happen at the NFL level, and he did have it. So he's been impressive.
Can you imagine the difference in wingspan between him and Kentavious Street?
Yeah,
that dude's like short and stocky, built like James Harrison, and suddenly you're trying to get Mekhi Becton off you. It's like if you and I were, you know, full extension, that's what we're talking about there, the difference.
On the other side, I want to see Phillip Rivers, right? Mm-hmm. If he didn't make, again, I'm a small sample size guy, tried to throw them out. 3 bad passes against Jacksonville. Yeah. 1 really bad interception. That's how close they are from being 2-0. They've moved the ball really well through 2 weeks. He's been under pressure just 17.6% of the time.
Yeah.
What does this feel? It must feel like us going, it feels like us going from the old tight little studio to this beautiful big studio that we're in right now. That's what Phillip Rivers feels like right now.
You should go full Galaxy Brain on this take and be like, he's just weirded out by the lack of pressure. So every now and again, he's expecting.
Right. He's waiting for the walls to cave in.
Yeah. And just throws a pick.
17% of his dropbacks, right? He has not been under pressure less than 33% since 2011. Like it's a whole different world for him. The Colts, if this keeps up, Rivers can make enough throws. They're dangerous. As dangerous as we expected before the season. And again, I just don't want to overrate the fact that they lost a game and they won a game. They're 1-1. They're still legit. They're 10.5-point favorites. I'd like them to obviously beat the Jets next week and maybe cover and run away with it, the way that offensive line is playing right now.
Lot.
All right, 3 more games to cover. The Carolina Panthers at the Los Angeles Chargers. Herbert's back.
Yeah.
Right?
And this time he knows it's coming.
Yes, he knows it's coming, which might not necessarily help. The Panthers' defense is not great at all. And the Tyrod Taylor story is just insane.
Yes.
I guess it's a little
imagine
crazy,
losing
right?
your job because some guy accidentally punctured your lung trying to give you a painkilling injection.
No, I can't.
Yeah, that would be tough.
I'm just going to say, I had a trainer work on my elbow one time, and I thought he was helping me, and then it hurt even more the next day, and I had to miss some time. I'm going to blame him.
Well, look.
It's your fault, A-Ray.
Everyone treats doctors, medical professionals, as if they're flawless, and clearly they're not. They're human like everyone else. So this is like one of those things that does go wrong. On the other hand, it goes wrong when somebody screws it up. Like it's not, this doesn't just happen by accident, right? This happens when somebody makes a balls of whatever it is they're doing. The same with any other mistake. The problem is when you're in the medical profession, you make a mistake, somebody's life gets a lot worse. So like that's what happened. It's a known risk and complication of what it was they were doing to him. On the other hand, it's also something that only happens when you screw it up.
I want to see the Panthers pass rush. That is what I want to look at.
They have a pass rush?
Well, they have
nine, has it been hiding?
They have nine pressures through 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But as I said on Carolina radio earlier today, they face Derek Carr, who, to your point, was, you know, check down Charlie. And then Brady, who gets rid of the ball really quickly, right? So they've got two guys really protecting that offensive line. The Chargers' offensive line, not good on paper, not good in reality, number 24 from a pass-blocking standpoint this year. So maybe the Panthers can get a little bit of pressure.
Does Derek Brown get a grade above 30 this week?
Man, it's been a rough start.
Two pretty awful assignments in terms of, like, really good interior offensive lines. Now at least he goes up against the Chargers, who are not as good. So if you can't do it this week...
One pressure on 50 rushes so far for Derek.
Yeah.
He might take some time to adjust. Big story here, obviously, is what does Herbert look like in week two?
Yeah.
I think he was it didn't feel like the Herbert coaster that he showed in college, but his accuracy was poor. Yeah, overall, his accuracy was poor.
Kind of was, though, you know.
Like, outside of two throws.
Beautiful touchdown, also hideous interception. Like, it didn't feel like it because they were leading most of the time, but...
It didn't feel
like... It was kind of still Herbert coaster.
If Kansas City, if their offense played like they normally did and it was like 37-20, it would feel like Herbert played the game that he did, which was a couple big throws, some bad stuff in there, but the Chargers kept it close. So, yeah, definitely want to see how he...
I think it's a great point, though, that, like, him knowing it's coming is not necessarily a good thing. Everyone is like, look what he did with zero prep. You're like, that might not have been a bad thing because you don't overthink it. And B, like, this week doesn't automatically tally that well. Now that he's prepared for a week, imagine how good he's going to be this week.
I mean, he should be better against this Panthers defense and all that stuff, but it's not because he practiced.
Right. But now he's had a week of knowing that he's the starter. That's not necessarily a great thing.
Maybe Kirk would be good if he just never told him.
We just always assumed he was the backup?
React.
Yeah.
Just react. Chargers by 6.5. That's how bad the Panthers are right now.
Yeah.
I'm taking the Chargers to win.
Same.
I think Carolina has a chance to keep it close, though.
Teddy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Teddy's got the second most turnover-worthy plays in the league. You can't, as a game manager, you can't be doing that.
Damn, I'm souring on Teddy.
Detroit, you are.
Much as I love the guy.
Sorry. Told you. Detroit Lions at the Arizona Cardinals. I'm picking at Arizona, and I think I'm getting sucked into the record thing right now.
No, you're not, and I'll tell you why, right? Because the thing that's making Arizona so dangerous right now is they're deploying Kyler Murray as, like, a legitimate part of the run game.
Right.
And they're doing it in designed runs, but it's also a threat to scramble anytime he wants. The Detroit Lions are playing man coverage, like, 60% of the time.
Ooh.
If you're going to turn your back on Kyler Murray on a consistent basis – you are asking for him to have a 100-yard rushing game and just gash you with those scrambles in key moments. They have run, I think, cover one, like 55% of the time, cover zero, another 6% of the time. Like, they are just inviting a Kyler Murray highlight reel to happen unless they adjust. And there's, like, why they haven't adjusted anything.
There's
so
little
far.
Evidence that Patricia has adjusted yet. Yeah.
So I think this is going to be a monster game for Kyler Murray. And unless they can match him, they're going to win.
I'm just looking at the other side, and I'm thinking Stafford's going to play better. He's among the lowest-graded quarterbacks right now. He's going to play better. I'm looking at Patrick Peterson in the secondary. He's coming off a poor season last year. He's had some difficult assignments. Terry McLaurin last week.
Yeah.
Torched him on slants. Anything in-breaking. Like, Peterson is, I think, right now a limited cornerback.
Did you see only, like, last week an NFL front office, you know, those anonymous sources polled NFL guys who's the best – guy in the league type deal, and a bunch of NFL front office people allegedly were polled, and Patrick Peterson was like the number three cornerback in the NFL. Like, what year tape do you have in the machine right now?
Yeah, I don't understand it. Like, he is just limited. And last year was the same thing. If he had to, he went into the slot to cover Emmanuel Sanders, smoked. Like, if he has to go face a good route runner,
game over.
He's got nothing. So I still have concerns about Arizona on the back end. I love what they're doing offensively.
Yep.
Kyler being a part of the run game again, his floor is high because of that. I'm taking Arizona, but if this was the one I was leaning toward, okay, if I'm going to pick an 0-2 team, it might be Detroit. Vegas has Arizona by 6, though, so they're still...
That feels rich.
Still buying it.
But I'm buying them to win the game. If
this could be the one game where Jared Davis actually makes an impact.
Yeah.
Spy Kyler Murray, use your athleticism. Jared Davis, watch out.
He's not catching Kyler Murray. That
yeah, but that's like at least one thing he's good at.
Look, if you're going to scamper with a high step, you win. The end.
All right, let's wrap it up. It's a 4 o'clock game. Tampa Bay Bucks at the Denver Broncos. Jeff Driscoll, head quarterback for the Broncos. We saw a little KJ Hamler the other day. We've seen Jerry Jeudy. I think the future is there for the Broncos. It's why we loved their draft, but this year it's going to be tough to see all of them.
Right, and the problem is now they need to be the present because Cortland Sutton tore up his knee 3 minutes after being back in the lineup.
Right.
Jerry Jeudy, though, against those Tampa Bay Buccaneers defensive backs is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Jeudy has that speed, quickness, turn on a dime thing. Those Bucs DBs are bigger. They've got long speed, but they have that sort of long physical, and those guys just don't deal well in short, confined spaces where you're dealing with quickness. Yeah, it's tough. Unless you can get your hands on a guy, those guys win with quickness. So I'm kind of interested to see if Jeudy just has himself a day just tearing those guys to pieces with route running and with sharp moves and all those kinds of things. On the other hand, might not matter if Jeff Driscoll's the quarterback.
You know why it really might not matter? I think it's because the Broncos have the third lowest pass blocking grade in the league, and this feels like one where Todd Bowles on the other side is going to blitz like crazy. Like Devin White's on his way, Levante Day, like they're going to get after it. We might see awesome routes where the ball never gets there.
Does Jeff Driscoll make it through this game? Does he play every snap of this game on offense for them?
As opposed to
Blake Bortles coming in and benching.
I mean, Blake Bortles is better. I don't know if he's ready with all this, but
he'll clear the protocols though, right? Like he's available. It's just a case of whether he's up to speed.
Yeah, I mean, I think Bortles should be the starter after, but
yeah. I mean,
I'll say my point is
what I'm pitching is a possibility as opposed to literally not possible because he's not going to clear protocols in time.
Yeah, I think Bortles gets there and he's in.
All right,
let's get him in there. This is the first time Mike Evans and Chris Godwin will be back and somewhat healthy. So Tom Brady has outplayed his stats so far.
Yes.
We'll see if this actually makes a difference. So No Mike Evans hamstring issue, no Chris Godwin missing the game with a concussion. Game 3 of Tom Brady in Tampa Bay.
Yep.
So that's it. It's going to be a great slate this week.
Good games.
Head on a swivel. A lot to keep up with. And
you don't need your head on a swivel anymore. It's an illegal penalty. They can't make that crack back block, so you don't need the head on a swivel anymore.
Well, I keep my head on a swivel on Sunday afternoons because I have the Octobox going
on
my DirecTV, so I try to watch everything at the same time as much as possible.
All right.
So, all right, are we playing us out with
the audio montage? The week 2 sounds that were.
I like it. Hashtag let us know what you think of Sam's audio work. I think it's great. I think it's good.
Okay.
Wait, let's underpromise. Mediocre work.
Let us know if you think it's better than crappy.
Is it better than crappy? Let us know. At PFF underscore Steve, at PFF underscore Sam. Thanks, guys. Everybody enjoy week 3. We'll be back Monday morning to recap everything.
But now the talent has to come together, and that has to start with quarterback Baker Mayfield. Touchdown, Browns! That was one heck of a throw right there by Baker Mayfield. He rolls out to his left, and to be able to set his feet, that's a great route and a great throw by Baker. And I like what I saw of this guy right here, Baker Mayfield. Good to see his swagger back tonight.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Second and 9, Mayfield. Good throw. Pass caught. Hodge forced out by Phillips. Good fastball from Mayfield.
Yeah, a real good fastball and on the money.
For the last 3 days, everybody's been talking about Mayfield and how off he was and inaccurate on Sunday. And then last year, he has been on the money all night here in this first half. Needs this without timeouts. Zerline, little squib, it's got to go 10 yards. And it's close. Zerline may have come through. Who's got it?
Three separate Falcons just watching this thing turn towards the line that it needed to cross and, like, do nothing. You can pick it up whenever you want. Jump on it.
Look at them all standing there. They're just waiting for it to become a live ball.
That is unbelievable. I mean, that is a humongous mistake.
I call that one the hypnotizer.
Well, how about this? Herbert's the quarterback on the first snap. No one knew this was coming.
So here comes Josh Allen with touchdown.
Allen play action, faking the handoff over the middle. Dangerous pass, it's caught. Allen threading the needle to Diggs. Marvelous catch in traffic. Allen faking the handoff. He's going to sling it again towards the end zone. Wide open is Brown. Touchdown. Perfectly thrown pass as they burn him for 47. And another brilliant pass by Allen. Simply incredible. Easy day at the office for Josh Allen.
It's first and goal.
They've got all the linemen in the game. You've got to think that they're going to run Cam. They haven't come close to stopping that play except for the one time on the two-point conversion. If he comes back and wins this game, people in New England are going to believe.
This is it.
Here we go.
Cam is going to take it himself, and he doesn't get in. And the Seahawks are going to win the game.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.
Napa Know How.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping and over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $35 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.